Teaching Disciples, Part 2, Commentary for the August 24th, 2024 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked, Mark 10, verse 36. Half a century ago, I was living a different life than I do today. While this may be true for most who reach their seventh decade, I am referring to the contrast between life in the military and life as a civilian. A civilian is free to come and go more than a military person. Of course, there are certain trade-offs for that freedom. Freedom brings with it the possibility of failure and loss if bad choices are made. In the Army, I never had to worry about a place to sleep, food to eat, clothes to wear, or a small basic income to spend as I chose. This meant that when I did make bad choices, the consequences were blunted. But a civilian could lose all those things, so every choice could come to mean life or death over even seemingly trivial matters. Most governments understand that taking care of the military is vital to the interests of the country and provide well for their service members. Young people who have not yet decided on a direction in life find the security and stability of a military career an inviting opportunity to learn maturity and responsibility while learning about the social contract between the state and its citizens. Lessons are learned there that will profit a person throughout their life. While I was stationed in Alaska, I learned some important lessons. I had met a young woman at church, and as things do between a young man and a young woman, we progressed to engagement and marriage. When I was single and had no one to spend my meager salary on except myself and my whims, it was enough. But now we were going to start a home together. I decided to attend paratrooper training at the Army base near Anchorage. That would qualify me for jump pay of $55 per month. I know that does not seem like much today, but remember, this was half a century ago. We had a large class of would-be paratroopers for the four-week course. This included 1 week of settling in and 3 weeks of actual training. The first 2 weeks was physical conditioning with running and push-ups at every opportunity. From our large class, over half dropped out at this stage. For the 3rd week, we jumped from towers with harnesses hooked to guide cables. The jolt when we were pulled up short as the slack came out of the harnesses left dish-sized bruises on our collarbones. We had to endure that pain as we were required to make a specified number of successful tower jumps before we would be allowed to do the real thing. The most painful of the tower jumps were the ones we were required to do with full backpacks. That made the harness buckles slam into our collarbones with even more force. We had more drop out at that point. The final week was jump week. During that week, we jumped from Chinook helicopters and C-130 Hercules cargo planes, the primary aircraft for airborne assaults. With the C-130s, there was not a lot of thinking involved about making the jump. The air currents along the side of the plane created a vacuum that tended to suck you out the doorway into the open sky where your static line would deploy your chute. The Chinooks were a little more intimidating. They would lower their rear ramp and you would walk out that ramp into the sky, trusting that your static line was fine and your chute would deploy as planned. During the Chinook jumps, one soldier had two chute malfunctions. The first one was called a Mae West, after a buxom actress, where a riser is caught over the top of the chute, separating the air chamber into two smaller chambers that do not as effectively check descent speed. That would be enough to give a person second thoughts about becoming a paratrooper. But on his second jump, he had a streamer where the chute does not open at all, streaming like a ribbon behind the falling paratrooper. Fortunately, he was able to deploy his reserve chute. It was smaller, but it adequately checked his descent. He went on to earn his paratrooper badge with the rest of us. I was fortunate enough to have no such incidents, the worst being twisting my ankle when the wind carried me into some small trees. One of the disadvantages of military parachutes is that they are difficult to steer. Civilian chutes have greater control, and some of my fellow paratroopers decided to take up civilian jumping to experience that. Since I was not there to seek thrills, I was happy with my badge and my $55 per month. When we graduated from paratrooper school, only one in four of us who began earned the badge. To accomplish that goal, we had to have faith in the process that was guiding us, and we had to be committed to that process. We could not entertain thoughts of failure, or we would find ourselves among the 75% who washed out. All of us had been sent off to paratrooper school with fanfare by the units we were part of. Those who washed out tended to slink back with a stigma of being losers. Granted, it took physical and mental strength to succeed, but more importantly, it took faith in the possibility of success, despite sacrifice. The Gospel of Mark chapter 10 illustrates that contrast with two stories. One story is that of the wealthy young man who came to Jesus for guidance. He saw the opportunity Jesus represented and decided to approach Jesus without self-examination of what he was willing to commit to for a future following the Messiah. Like a soldier that sees the elan of the paratrooper and the respect they are accorded and decides to enroll in training without considering his level of commitment, this wealthy young man, when Jesus opened his eyes to that commitment, washed out before he could even begin the training he must face as a disciple. In his case, he had placed all his faith and commitment in his wealth and could not then transfer that faith and commitment to Jesus. He failed to see the advantage he was passing by because of the advantages he had. The contrasting story is the one involving Jesus healing a blind man. While the wealthy young man was unaware of his spiritual blindness, Bartimaeus, through his experience with physical blindness, knew how important sight was. When he heard of Jesus healing miracles, he committed himself through faith in those stories and committed to seek Jesus out when he could and ask for his sight. Despite all the naysayers who tried to shout him down, he would not be deterred. When he called out to Jesus, Jesus called out to him. He had nothing to offer but his faith. Everything else popularized by institutional religion melts away before that simple, direct, and innocent plea for healing. We like to think that if we do this or that based on what the church tells us, we will find favor with God. But we do not understand that God already loves us, and we do not need to be something we are not to feel that love. We are all blind, lepers, perverse, thoughtless, and uncaring, and the church tells us to stay in our lane, as the people tried to do with blind Bartimaeus. But Jesus does not operate like that. Rather than condemn us for our failings, he comes to heal us, to save us from our brokenness, according to John 3:17. Unlike what the church has done so many times before, he does not turn his back on us, according to John 6:37. Like Jesus' words about divorce earlier in this chapter in Mark, it is only because of the hardness of our hearts that churches disfellowship members. But removing someone from the membership rolls of a church never removes them from God's flock or from the Book of Life. Only God can do that, and there are not enough tears in all of humanity to equal the sorrow of God that would accompany such an action. Blithely we push and shove one another from the flock, unaware or willingly ignorant of the heartbreak this brings to God. There is hope for everyone in the arms of the Savior. Our life may have been a constant experience of Mae Wests and streamers, despite our faith and commitment. But if we remain true to the relationship despite all, there will come a graduation, a glorious day of redemption and transformation, and all heaven will rejoice together with us as we rise to become all that God intended humanity to be, bound together with one overriding principle, love. We have lost the image of God, but it is safely held in his keeping, to be restored to all who are willing to open their hearts in faith. Blind Bartimaeus received his sight. There is so much more that God will heal in us if we only stay the course. He asks us now, as he asked then, "What do you want me to do for you?" Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, articles written by the author, and books by the author, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.